Yes, the party starts on here, CKUW 95.9 FM on your dial in Winnipeg. This is Ras Rikwai with Prince Ogona, Princess Chim Solom, Queen Victoria, Dr. T, and John, who's here but never here, but always here at times at the editorial hour, Princess Rachel, and always here doing the moving up and down and in and out of the sound, Princess Catherine. Look out, we're coming hard, we're coming bad, right up until 8 this morning, when we'll make way for the wooden spoon. Hallelujah. Peter and Ross require on bells. Bud Smith on vocals. Earl St. Aubyn on toms. And Jesse Daniels on mama drum.
No more deception, no. Oh no. Manuela, and you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. And the radio show name is called Fantastic Friday. Please come and join us every single Friday morning from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. every Friday morning.
That literally 15, 20 minutes before this press conference started, our premier of Manitoba, Wab Kanu, took time out of his day while he's at Sundance ceremony at that to ask us how we felt about the verdict. And he apologized that they had to take the route that they had to take, but it was just so that we could see justice for all four of our women. Mm-hmm. And I understood why they had to take that route. And now I'm looking forward to finally pushing the work towards searching the landfill. He let us know that our healing lodge was put down on the grounds today. Mm-hmm. And hopefully within the next few months, we'll be able to start searching.
Welcome to Tyrol.
Hey, everyone. I'm Jess Turner. Make sure you listen to Fantastic Fridays on CKUW 95.9 FM every Friday morning, 6 a.m. till 8 a.m. That's way too early for me. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Traveling through the African diaspora. Music to get you up, get you moving.
Isn't it?
Isn't it? to say. Ray Charles, Emeritus.
So I'll just live my life in dreams of yesterday. Those happy hours that we once knew, though long ago, they still make me blue. They say that time heals a broken heart, but time has stood still since we've been apart.
Yeah.
I've made up my mind.
Very important factor.
Because you're beautiful.
Loving.
Making love with you is all I wanna do. Loving you is more than just a dream come true. And everything that I do is out of loving you.
I'm Julian Cooper. You're listening to Fantastic Friday on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. This is my favorite morning wake-up show.
Even when I'm at the country, you find me somewhere with a bomb. The sulfur res, I'ma rent my place. I still remember them days, that courage, and I'm getting a cake. I can't be fake. I'm facing my problems, I'll do what it takes. This time you can play, just turn up the bass when you feel the pain.
All the drama, and the gossip, I'm over it. Need the commas, need to prosper, real dollars, no counterfeit. All the drama, and the gossip, I'm over it. Need the commas, need to prosper, real dollars, no counterfeit. I wanna see my people at the top.
plastic, now they know it's ours.
Still so
shout out to that plug.
Fuck whatever you were saying, why they get some money?
People claiming they know me, I'm zooming right past and I'm ghosty. Feel like, man, I ain't know you were smoking. Bitches pull up the board, get roasty. Life getting wild, I'm focused. They used to decide, I'm strong. You can go for this life if you want it. No, you get what I mean if you got it, yeah.
All the drama, the trauma, and the gossip, I'm over it. Need the commas, need the prosper. Real dollars, no counterfeit. All the drama, the trauma, and the gossip, I'm over it.
This is so hard, we gon' get a big
dollars, no
funny, never shot a gun. That is funny, cause it's something these rappers put in their song. So you know I gotta start a riot, spitting fire. Call me a dragon, cause this fire got me flying. I'm about to hit the world. You nervous hitting your girl and telling her not to listen. So what, I'm on a mission, got my Reeboks on. Oh damn, how I miss him, oh damn. You can miss me with that, let's make a song and put it out on a playlist. So if I never make it, you can make it for me, homie. The game is a joke, they really treat you, homie. That's why I'm never making friends. I'm surrounded by family, so you know I ain't playing. I'm just trying to get paid. Money, girls, good looking bros. Every other album, the recipe to a fraud. I mean, why are you trying to work when you can say the same word? Call a Gucci gang and make 100 other rappers give up on the art. List the few prescription drugs, make everyone lose their mind. Just know I ain't here to play, I'm limitless to the sky. Go ahead and thank me for your daily doses of bars. It's the S to the K to the Y, L-E-R. Natives in the 204. Just know I'm coming for the spot.
Oh no, 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 mom, I'm a rapper.
I ain't trying to work, man, I'ma make this happen.
Oh no, no, oh no, no.
Let me play around, let me put him in the casket.
To reach the top, it's kill or be killed. I carried my brothers, but they only saw me as a male. When climbing the hill, they're signing a deal, they praise you. As soon as you leave, the truth is they secretly hate you. They just wanted the attention I was trying to share. Left me to bleed alone, losing my mind in the mirror. Try me, I dare you to step on me. I'll leave you crying, I swear to body you, I'm not the one that's dying to hear.
I gave up many times, there's so many ways to days. But I'm different, I'm so confident, that's why I'm here to make waves. One thing goes and another thing's wrong. How you gonna go when you don't believe that you get strong? It's a battle of thoughts, so who you gonna beat most?
Yeah, you're so much, the gutter, you can be a lone wolf. Cause when no one else believes in you, you know you got yourself. Cause
when you hit the bottom, there's always a way out.
We're back.
You already know that.
Oh yeah. This is what happens when brothers of different colors stand up for the mother.
A good boy was my son.
He was such a good boy.
No angel, not the chosen one.
You know I'm no angel.
On that day he did
one love,
nothing wrong.
Peace in heaven.
Those bullets did
Matthew
not
Cumas.
Belong.
He started as a good boy, but died in the hood, boy. The city is a jungle, so look out for the woods, boy. Criminal appearance, aboriginal appearance. Took the wrong way home, now he's walking with the spirits. Don't get caught in the hysterics, I'm just talking with my lyrics. Just trying to let my kids live without the interference. It's bigger than the boy shot and cop who pulled the trigger. It's a product of our history, how Canada's configured, what you figure? Well, here's one man's opinion. Old habits die hard, you wanna kill the Indian. But you can't kill us, the elders taught us to survive. There's a cop chopper in the sky, should we run for our lives? No, never, I'm more clever, making tomorrow more better. Jessica like a native co-redder. Scott King, we need to stop things. I think we should, boys, or more native mums. Say goodbye to they good boys.
A good boy was my son.
Yeah, man.
No angel, not the chosen one.
Hi, I'm Dale Rufus, and you're listening to Fantastic Fridays on CKUW 95.9, my favorite Friday morning wake-up show.
It hasn't gone away yet.
This is for my city dwellers, my storytellers, my soundscapers, music makers, and my dreamers of dreams. This is for the beat layers, the street sayers, the graph writers, and the painters. This is for the crate keepers, the image freezers, the lens seekers, and the photogs. This is for the spinners, the rewinders, drop the needle, pull it back, and come againers. This is for the movers, the body users, the kinetic acrobatic defying gravity provers. This is for the filmmakers, the actors, the activators, my sculptors, and my cans. Sprayers. This is for the da-da-dubbers, the dancers, the scribers, the scholars. This is for the freestylers, my improvisers, my poetical, lyrical, spiritual vocalizers. This is for my speechifiers, for the visionaries, for the bridge builders, the chain breakers, the power takers. This is for the door crashers, my drum beaters, the call to action taker to the streeters. For my behind the sceners, my planners, my finders, our on task and right on timers. For our organizers, our survivors, our motivators, and our strivers. This is for the uplifters and uprisers. This is for you, our ancestors. This is for you, our people blessers, our children, for our vision, for our villages, our hoods, our nations, our truths. This is for our culture, for our generation. This is for our creator and our creation. This is for our inner being and our outer, for our say it louder, big and prouder. This is for the art, for the word. This is for the sound. This is for the power.
Can't stop, won't stop, get guap. 10 white toes and them toy flip-flops. Manicures and pedicures, I'm always tip-top. When they say I'm not hot, all these lies need to stop. Cause I'm icy, wifey, haters wanna fight me. Never been the one get RP up on a whitey. Keep my hands clean, got some hitters moving shicey. Ask me if I'm rolling with some Gucci, bitch, I might be. It's very unlikely, my wrist ain't looking icy. Charging by the minute, cause my time is very pricey. Yeah, I be what a boss would be. Judging for my vibe, you can feel it in my energy. Stacking paper steadily so I can live in luxury. Looking in the mirror, I thank God for what I'm about to be. You beefing with my enemy, does not make you a friend of me. Girl, so weird, stay clear, I'm living drama free. Never living comfortably, got a lot of goals for me. My team is trying to eat, so we grinding so immensely. You trying to get a bag of weed, I'm trying to get a bag of wheat. Put it in my savings and invest in the right companies. My dream is like a child and I'm taking all the custody. Obstacles be slowing me, but that buffer molding me. So I take my time, cause I'm always where I'm supposed to be. Keep my niggas close to me, cause I know when they go for me. You cannot get a hold of me, I'm probably in a soul of me. Always making moves, man, that's how I keep my sanity. Yeah, it's my team summer. Couple setbacks, bounce back and recover. The clip real small, but we making big moves. And we headed to the top so we can get a better view, like. Get a better view, like. I'ma catch a tan overseas while I'm out the country. Let me get some Hennessy while I'm chilling on the beach. I'ma count a couple G's, let the server bring receipts. Double checking my expenses, never messy, always neat, never ever. Ask how a hot girl do it. Number one stunner, icy girl with a Cuban. Cash money mama that be dining in Bahamas. Eating fettuccine pasta with the scallops and the lobsters. I don't got no time for these hoes. Speaking on my name like I'm someone that they know. I'm the big cat bitch, yes these niggas love me. Is that Gucci on my feet? Shit, pitching might be.
Since I've gotten older, I've realized we all care about things that don't really matter. We're just told it does, and now we're all trying to keep our heads above the water. But what if we don't wanna? If there's something you wanna do, just do it. Don't let your head stop your heart from moving. If there's someone you wanna talk to them. Who knows who we'd be if we just live more and love more. We all just need to live more and love more. When we're not here anymore, it all comes down to who we were and what we stood for, not what we had and not where we live. So when we're told it does, maybe then we'll see. We don't just have to keep our heads above the water. Not if we don't wanna. If there's something you wanna do, just do it. Don't let your head stop your heart from moving. If there's someone you wanna talk to, who knows who we'd be if we just live more and love more. So hug your kids close.
You're still listening to Fantastic Friday on CKUW 95.9 FM when you died in Winnipeg. This is last week with Prince O'Gorman, who is not here this morning. Princess Kim Tulam, Queen Victoria, Dr. T, and John, who is here but never here. Also, Princess Rachel at the editorial hour whenever available, but always there. Princess Catherine, feeding in and out and around and about. Hit them!
Hey, hey, you're listening to Fantastic Friday on CKUW 95.9 FM. Ka-cha.
It ain't a man's world.
You know,
no more sugar and spice.
And everything
is a sweet thing.
And it's all in me. I can be anything that I want to be. Don't consider me a minority. Open up your eyes and maybe you'll see. It's a sweet thing. And it's all in me. Anything that I wanna be. Don't consider me a minority. Ladies, help me out if you agree.
Still telling you, it's hell on earth in Palestine. And nobody's trying to do anything. I mean, those who have power to do something, eh? So we have democracy, but all we exist in is hypocrisy because nobody's trying to help. Those who have power is giving more power to those who want to devour the Palestinian people. They will live. We will make sure they live.
Treat me like a sex subject. Underestimate the mind. Oh yeah, you a fool. Weak cuz sex, you're right. That's a joke. Have you ever been in labor? I don't think so, no. I'm a genuine feminine female thing. Can you hang? Ain't nothing but a sheep thing. It's a sheep thing. And it's all in me. I could be anything that I want to be. Don't consider me a minority. Open your eyes and maybe you'll see. It's a sheep thing. And it's all in me.
Female, doing what I feel. Put me to the test, yes, I will get ill. Sensitive and sweet, yeah, all that good stuff. But when it's time to get rough, baby, I'm rough enough. Ain't afraid to show how I feel down deep. Compassionate, but don't underestimate me. I'm intelligent, wise, complicated being with the instinct to dream and believe in the dream. Families first before anybody else. Take care of them before I take care of self. I'm a genuine feminine female thing. Can you hang?
Ain't nothing but a sheep thing.
Thing. We got the power, yeah, you know the deal. So you go, girl.
Go, girl.
It ain't no man's world. You can do anything.
You can do anything.
Do what you feel.
Excuse me, hold up. Pep got the floor. Giving props to the strong women laying down the door. Taking control of the wrongs in their life.
Hey.
Standing up and turning all the wrongs to the right.
Oh.
I like to give a shout out to the mamas out there. You're in charge of the future of the nation. Do the right thing. Lay the foundation. To all the single mothers, salt and pepper said, keep your head up. I know it gets hard sometimes, but never let up. You're a genuine feminine female thing. Can you hang?
Ain't nothing but a sheep thing.
It's a sheep thing.
And it's all in me. I can be anything that I want to be. Don't consider me a minority. Open up your eyes and maybe you'll see. It's a sheep thing. And it's all in me.
Any man believe that word.
It is all in me. I could be anything that I want to be. Don't consider me a minority. Open up your eyes.
Watch out, the kingdom out and the queen. I come out, cut
watch how they are spread red carpet. One thing me have to tell all of them, so watch out. Adam Mercy. Adam Mercy. Watch me now. It name murder me wrote and me no take back me chat. Shuffle the date me and the queen in a day park. Look how me cute and sexy like that. And me plant the con, so no better watch that. Show me step up in a life, them won't forgive me a fight. Show me look cute and them no look too right. They call a need to over me, man, a fight. And that now one, no time in a them life. Me no cut up, I can model every time. Absolute niceness, coming with pair rhyme. First class, dress code and your style, a lick.
Hi everyone, my name is Belaine Osman. I'm a student here at the U of W. My students actually call me Madame Oz. Just letting you know, CKUW has an awesome show called Fantastic Friday, and you guys should listen to it. Stay tuned.
Well, here it is. Big time.
Think you where you come from? As long as you're a black man,
a black woman or a black child.
No mind your nationality. You have got the identity
and perspicacity.
Cause if you come from Clarendon,
it don't matter.
And if you come from Portland,
it don't matter.
And if you come from Westmoreland, you're
it really don't matter. Because coming to you all the way from West Africa, in the country called Nigeria, the brother they call Prince Ogona, coming and give you news and views from Africa. But we're just going to call him in now because he's at a distance. Good morning, Ogona.
No mind your nationality. I've got the identity of
good morning, so for listeners.
Yes. That's all? All right, I'm going to take up your spot this morning. We're going to have something coming to you from Democracy Now! It's a roundup on what has been happening in Palestine and how that effort has been going worldwide. Some of the lies that are being told and some of the misdirections that we get in. And one of the biggest misdirections we get in right now is the U.S. Politics with Biden not good or not good, and then this one bad, and this one is a Nazi and all kind of thing. And it's taken away from Palestinians who are dying every day. Every day there's close to 100 Palestinians being killed while they're saying they're looking for a ceasefire. They're not looking for a ceasefire. They're looking to wipe out and finish off the Palestinians. Otherwise, any type of ceasefire would have gone into effect now to stop those murders, to stop that genocide. Okay, here's a couple of pieces from Democracy Now! The first one is by somebody who used to formerly represent Israel in peace talks, but now he's doing a total overall analysis of what has been happening and what could happen.
Yes, indeed. Good to be with you. So the idea is that in the initial phase, there would be the withdrawal of the troops from large parts of Gaza, of the Israeli military. You would have the release of those Israelis being held who are still alive and are not male soldiers. You would allow the real ramping up of humanitarian access. Of course, that should happen anyway. And you would have Palestinian prisoners being released. And then you would move on to a second phase where there would be a more significant Palestinian prisoner release, a full Israeli military withdrawal. The remaining soldiers would be released. And a third phase in which bodies would be returned. And there would be the start of more consummate rehabilitation efforts. But those are supposed to flow 1 to 2 to 3. The big question, and it's been the question for months, is whether you can just do phase one and then continue with the destruction, with everything you've been reporting on for months now, 21,000 children unaccounted for, 38,000 dead in Gaza and counting, and that's without knowing what's under the rubble. Does that continue? Or are there serious commitments that this will be a permanent cessation of this kind of hostility? And here's the rub. The document is trying to create a degree of constructive ambiguity, I think. And Hamas have said, Look, we know there's nothing ironclad. I'm paraphrasing, okay? We know there's nothing ironclad, but we need to know with maximum plausibility that there is a commitment to this being a permanent cessation. And what you have on every occasion is the Israeli prime minister stepping forward and saying, whoa, no, I am committing to continuing the war until its objectives are realized. Those objectives are unrealizable. The military knows that. The families of the hostages know that. And therefore, he is trying to do everything to prevent a deal. And what we are seeing in the reportage is, unfortunately, still a lot of unsubstantiated optimism and, from the U.S. administration, continued deception. Okay, so on the Hamas side of things, I think there has been a deliberate misinterpretation of the Hamas position. The permanent ceasefire was never locked into phase one. It was always part of the transition from phase one to phase two. And there has constantly been this question of how to make that as reasonable, as likely as possible. Now, Hamas may be looking at this. I'm not privy to their internal conversations, of course. Hamas may be looking at this and saying, we're still here. We will be here if the Israelis resume their actions after a six-week hiatus. We now have a situation where, in order to dial down the escalation on the northern Israel-Lebanon, Israel-Hezbollah front, you very clearly need our situation to be dialed down. Maybe we can get the kind of humanitarian relief in that all of these things will make it increasingly difficult for Israel, even if that's what they intend, to resume these kinds of actions after 6 weeks, and we have a more desperate administration in the US. That might suggest where some additional wiggle room has been created. However, that wiggle room, I don't think, can be sufficient enough to sustain what you mentioned in the second part of your question, which is to sustain a very vocal, very transparent and insistent Israeli forcing the issue that no, there can be no permanent ceasefire. Netanyahu put out four conditions. One of them was any deal will allow Israel to resume fighting until all of the objectives of the war have been achieved. So that doesn't give you an ability to work. Now, what about what's going on inside Israel? Your question regarding, is the pressure now at a place where Netanyahu simply has to accept this? The unfortunate answer, and I so hope I'm wrong with all of this, the unfortunate answer is no, you do have greater protests, you do have the families more mobilized, you do have a military that is more clearly saying, again, I'm paraphrasing, if we want a chance to deal with the situation in the north, whether de-escalating or having the attention span to deal militarily, then you need a ceasefire in Gaza. The military, by the way, prefers a deal. They prefer a ceasefire deal in Gaza because they know that's the only way they'll get a significant cohort of the hostages out. And they know that their reservists, their troops, have been on the front line for an awfully long time and are rather exhausted. So the military more transparently has said that. You do have the parliament going into a summer recess. And so the hope, I think, was that Netanyahu could tell his right-wing, even more extreme than himself, coalition allies, guys, don't leave me during the summer recess. There's no urgency here. I promise you that by the time the parliament is back after the Jewish holidays in October, I'll be killing Palestinians just like I've done and just like you like me to do. We'll be fighting a war in Gaza. In the meantime, you can have fun in the West Bank, causing provocation, causing mayhem, displacing Palestinians. Don't rush to do anything crazy. And they are saying, no, we're going to bring you down. And Netanyahu is looking around and he sees that the domestic pressure inside Israel is not a threat to his coalition stability. And crucially, he is seeing that the U.S. administration will continue when push comes to shove to say, oh, it's Hamas's fault. And they will continue to send the weapons without which Israel could not be causing this death and destruction, the 500-pound bombs released again. And he knows he has a nice little date with Congress following the invitation by the Republican and Democratic congressional leadership. I don't like giving one-word responses, but it would be amen. So if you're looking at it from the Israeli perspective, then absolutely the way that the congressional leadership, but I would argue the way the administration has behaved, has cut off at the knees any prospect of the shift in Israel that's necessary to end this war that has led to the ICC and the ICJ, those international courts taking those measures. By the way, if I was looking at this from the perspective of international law in general and the perspective of the Palestinians living under these conditions, I would say, how the hell can you invite Netanyahu? But let me just say this, because you referenced that piece by Ignatius in the Washington Post. And here's what most concerns me this morning. Ignatius is not writing as his own opinion here. He's a consummate insider. He is being a faithful stenographer of the spin being given to him by the administration. And Ignatius writes the following, that it would be a ringing validation of President Biden's patient diplomacy and a potential valedictory moment if he got this ceasefire. Now, just pause. What the spin that the administration is telling us is, wow, we could get it through our patient diplomacy. Can I translate the term patient diplomacy? Patient diplomacy means that after 9 months, you have tens of thousands who are dead, 9 out of 10 people who are displaced, starvation, humanitarian catastrophe, scholasticide. This is patient diplomacy that you should be proud of. The hostages are still there. America's international reputation, that which was still remaining as an upholder of international law, has been thoroughly taken to the cleaners. And of course, there's the internal situation on the Democrat side. And I would simply say, because I listened to your earlier segment, that you have a real problem if you think you can sell this spin. And if you treat your voters with contempt, you do that at your own risk. I'm sitting here in the UK and I've just come back from Paris. I'll tell you what happened in our elections here. In our elections here, Labour won a stunning majority in Parliament, but lost and only received 34% in the popular vote, 6% less than Corbyn in 2017. Why? Because voters deserted Labour over Gaza. And then in France, you saw a new left alliance come together, close the enthusiasm gap with the right. Yes, it was about keeping the extreme right out, but it was also because one of the things that new left alliance did was to come up with a credible position on Gaza. And I would simply ask the question, is this stunning validation of your approach what you're going to be selling people? And you still haven't got the ceasefire. You're still sending the weapons. You are still in violation of international law. Wow, it's a big issue. So what's going on here is the military knows they have no political plan. They're being sent on a mission that is unachievable. They've actually openly said you cannot defeat Hamas in the way Netanyahu talks about this de-radicalization agenda in Gaza. It's for the birds. So I think what the military are saying is we need a different approach. The problem here, in addition to, of course, what the military has been conducting in Gaza, is that these are the same guys in the military who were in charge on October 7th. And there is a fight. There is a blame game between the military leadership and Netanyahu.
We have 20 seconds, Daniel.
Was it political failure or was it military failure? You have blame games when there is a failure. That's what it is. And Netanyahu may replace some of this military, and that could be even more dangerous.
And here's another piece that we have. That looks at the strategies and the hopes that Palestinians have. And again, this is observed by other people. This is Jeremy. Jeremy is one of those writers that who have been digging deep as to what has been happening, how it come to be, and where it's heading. Listen to him for a little.
Yeah, well, Amy, you know, I've spent the past couple of months talking with officials from Hamas, some of them on background, some of them on the record. I also just returned from a reporting trip to the region, and I'm going to be doing more reporting in the coming days on this. But I think it's important to emphasize that October 7th didn't happen in a vacuum. You know, often when American officials talk about what Hamas refers to as Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, it's characterized as Hamas shattered the peace. The reality is that for 76 years, there has been no true peace for the Palestinian people in general, and certainly not for the people of Gaza. In the past 17 years, they've lived in an open-air prison where they've been subjected to calorie-restricted diet, to sanctions, a blockade, regular airstrikes by the Israeli military, and a tactic that Israel calls mowing the lawn. And prior to October 7th, you had a number of factors at play. The primary motivation, Hamas members told me, was to try to shatter the status quo on Gaza. They felt that the situation was becoming untenable. Israel's strategy of collective punishment was aimed at trying to force local people in Gaza to rise up against Hamas. And indeed, there were indications in public opinion polling that people were growing increasingly frustrated with Hamas, which is not just an armed insurgency movement or resistance movement, but also was a governing authority. But it was beyond just the horrifying conditions in Gaza and the sort of sense of hopelessness. Under President Trump, the United States initiated a series of diplomatic agreements that they referred to as the Abraham Accords. And essentially, what that amounted to was the United States trying to broker bilateral agreements between Arab and Muslim nations and Israel. And, you know, for 20 years, the status quo on any agreements with Arab nations had to include a resolution of the Palestinian question and the question of a Palestinian state. And what Trump and company did was to embrace Netanyahu's idea that the Palestinians should not be given a veto over a relationship with other Arab nations. And so, you know, when you combine that with the expansion of the annexations, with the ongoing tensions at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the holiest site in Islam that exists in Palestine, and you look at the horrifying conditions in Gaza, Hamas's perspective was, we need to shatter all of this. And we don't believe that negotiation with Israel is going to be effective. They invoke other revolutionary and resistance movements throughout history, and gave a full-throated defense, even with the consequences that we've seen in a minimum of 40,000 Palestinians killed, but likely much, much higher than that.
This is a clip of National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan speaking.
When we came into office, you had the war in Yemen raging as the world's largest humanitarian catastrophe. You had, a few months before we came in, our embassy in Baghdad stormed, and Secretary of State Pompeo going out and talking about pulling the entire American mission out of Iraq. You had Iranian groups in both Syria and Iraq firing missiles at U.S. forces. All of that's what we walked into. And what we said is we want to depressurize, de-escalate, and ultimately integrate the Middle East region. The war in Yemen is in its 19-month of truce. For now, the Iranian attacks against U.S. forces have stopped. Our presence in Iraq is stable. I emphasize for now because all of that can change. And the Middle East region is quieter today than it has been in two decades.
Well, let's remember that in May of 2021, Israel engaged in an 11-day heavy bombing campaign against Gaza. And at the heart of that was the attempt to evict people from the Jerusalem, occupied East Jerusalem neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah, as well as clashes at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, where the Netanyahu government was effectively allowing Israeli settlers and others to come and, in the views of Palestinians, sort of defile this holy site. And so Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad launched a series of rockets into Israeli territory. About a dozen Israeli civilians were killed. Netanyahu responded with a heavy bombardment in which several hundred Palestinians were killed. And Joe Biden was very early in his presidency, fully endorsed that. But he did eventually say, OK, the runway is up. He calls Netanyahu. And 2 days later, Netanyahu engages in a brokered ceasefire with Egypt. With Hamas, but via Egypt. And in the 2 years between those airstrikes in 2021 and the launch of Al-Aqsa Flood on October 7th, Hamas was watching the Biden administration, and they watched how Biden picked up the mantle from Trump on the Abraham Accords and started moving forward. And also the fact that it really did seem, and I think this goes beyond the walls of Gaza and into broader Palestinian community in historic Palestine, but also in the world, that the United States and others were presiding over a definitive decay of the aspiration for a Palestinian state. And they, from their perspective, this was in the epic history of Israel-Palestine, The opening salvo in what they hoped would be the definitive battle that would call the question on the existence of the state of Palestine. If we can fast forward, though, to what you were talking about earlier with the negotiations, you know, I spoke to members of Hamas's delegation that are right at this moment engaged in these negotiations. And what they said is they've noticed over recent weeks that the U.S. negotiators appear to be growing increasingly frustrated with Israel. Now, of course, there's this whole fiction about how Biden is so frustrated with his great friend Benjamin Netanyahu. That's not what they're referring to. They're talking about on a tactical level that the United States negotiators, William Burns and others, seem to really be fed up and wanting to make a deal. And that's why I think it came as somewhat of a shock to people when over the weekend Netanyahu leaked to the media, according to Israeli news organizations, his four non-negotiables. And among them was he reserves the right to continue pummeling Gaza until he achieves total victory. You know, from Hamas's perspective, they also feel that they have their red lines. While the fact remains that an enormous number of Palestinians have been slaughtered with U.S. weapons in this genocidal war, the insurgency, the armed groups, Islamic Jihad and Hamas, have waged a war of attrition against Israeli occupation forces. They've killed a large number of Israeli troops. They've blown up tanks. Despite the fact that they're characterized as rats hiding in tunnels, they've proven very effective at delivering serious blows to the Israeli occupation forces. And Hamas is also keenly aware of the fact that Netanyahu is under immense pressure inside of Israel because of the issue of the hostages. And his insistence that they're going to liberate Israelis that are being held in Gaza by military force has proven very deadly for the hostages themselves. And so, you know, what I think we're seeing here is this utter hubris of Netanyahu, where he believes that it's justifiable to link his personal political fate to the release of Israelis who are being held. I think that's the perspective in Israel right now. From Hamas's perspective, I don't think that they are willing to take the idea of a permanent ceasefire off the table. What I've been told by sources is that they're willing to engage in what they call an incremental series of agreements. And, you know, one of the prime demands beyond an end to the genocidal war that Hamas is putting forward is they want more prisoners released. You know, there are thousands of Palestinians being held in Israeli prisons and jails and administrative detention. Yes, they want the civilians, the women and children that Israel is holding to be released, but they also want prisoners that Israel calls the impossibles, people who are armed resistance figures, some of whom have been convicted of murdering Israelis. Israel has said they will not release Palestinians with Jewish blood on their hands. Hamas is insisting that they also get to have their combatants returned if Israel wants its soldiers back. So there are huge issues here. And the final thing I'll say is, remember, Yahya Sinwar, the Gaza-based head of Hamas, who is widely believed to be one of the three main organizers of Al-Aqsa flood on October 7th, himself spent nearly 23 years in an Israeli prison. And he was released in 2011 in a massive prisoner exchange where more than 1,000 Palestinians were freed from Israeli jails in return for one Israeli soldier, Gilad Shalit. So Hamas officials all emphasized to me that one of the primary goals of their operations on October 7th was to take as many soldiers that they could back to Gaza, because they believe that that was the only way to free high-value prisoners, including Marwan Barghouti, who is not a member of Hamas. He's Fatah, but he is widely viewed as the top Palestinian who could unify the Palestinian cause and move forward in the effort to achieve an independent, unified Palestinian state. Yeah, I mean, one thing that Hamas officials that I've spoken with and have talked to others have emphasized, and you know, you can take this with a grain of salt, but this is their position. They're saying that they did not go into Israel with the intent to engage in the mass killing of civilians, and they have their own definition of civilian that doesn't include male settlers, and you know, so you have to kind of go down a rabbit hole to fully understand what they're saying. But what I think is relevant is that Hamas is saying, look, a lot of people got killed in crossfire when we were battling against both armed settlers and Israeli military and police forces. And this has been covered extensively in the Israeli media. There was a case in Kibbutz Biri where about a dozen Israeli civilians were killed in a shelling by Israeli tanks of a house that there were Palestinian gunmen in. And Yasmin Porat, one of the survivors of that, has been very outspoken. Look, also independent news outlets that have covered this crisis for a long time, like Electronic Intifada and Mon Wanda Weiss, Ali Abu Nima, they said from the beginning that it appeared that at least some form of a Hannibal doctrine style operation was unleashed, and they were ridiculed for it and people were dismissing it. And now it seems clear, we don't know the extent to which this was implemented, that a fair number of Israelis were in fact killed by their own forces, either in so-called friendly fire incidents or, as Haaretz is indicating, deliberately to prevent hostages from being taken back to Gaza. Yeah, and you know, your previous guest was alluding to some of this as well. I mean, now we're learning, and I think we only understand a fraction of the intelligence warnings that were delivered to the highest echelons of power in Israel. But we've known for months that there were primarily female intelligence analysts that were basically sounding the alarms up their chain of command, that it appeared as though Hamas and other organizations were engaged in a specific sort of training exercise that looked like it was mimicking the kind of assaults that we then ultimately saw unfold on October 7th. There's some indication, as your guest was saying, that the U.S. may have also provided intelligence. And when you look at this crumb, this trail of crumbs, of clues, it's very difficult to rule out that somewhere, at some point within the Israeli security apparatus, someone was aware of this and decided that they didn't want to take it seriously. You know, I'm not engaged in conspiracy theorizing about any of this, but there is a huge scandal, I think, that is going to continue to unfold in Israel. And many Israelis are asking that question. Look, Israel is a nuclear power, armed, funded, supported, bankrolled, backed by the United States of America. It has promoted an image of itself around the world that it can reach its enemies wherever they are and assassinate them and take them out. And that all crumbled on October 7th. When you had guys that are making sniper rifles and buying equipment that you can get on Amazon, and they're taking out surveillance towers with their low-end quality drones and using paragliders to go in, or doing amphibious assault landings, the idea that a modern military that is bankrolled, armed, and funded by the United States was not able to repel that force raises a lot of questions that I think Israeli society is going to be grappling with for quite some time. Yeah, I mean, one of the things I was trying to do in this reporting was to explore the breadth of perspectives on this question of, you know, on the one hand, I don't think that anybody who has a reasonable grasp of the history would deny that the Palestinian people have a right to resist, and that Israel and the international community have sent a message to Palestinians that even nonviolent resistance is going to be met with force, as happened in 2018 and 2019 in the nonviolent demonstrations at the barriers of Gaza, where Israeli snipers had a competition to see how many unarmed protesters they could shoot in the knee. So I don't think that there can really be any reasonable debate about whether or not the Palestinians have a right to resist. This is a tactical question. Should Hamas have been able to predict that the response from Israel was going to be far beyond any of the other recent bombing campaigns? And I heard different answers from people within Hamas. Some said, look, we knew that it was going to be a heavy response. We knew that a lot of people were going to die. This is the nature of how Israel responds to our legitimate resistance. But we did not imagine that it was going to be more than kind of what happened in 2014 or 2021, but maybe on some steroids. But there were other officials that said no one within Hamas predicted that it was going to be this scale of a genocidal war. There isn't necessarily a party line on this. I got the sense that this is a question also that Hamas itself is debating, because there are going to be people that are going to confront them with these questions within Gaza itself. There's an interesting dynamic that has played out, though, where you see Hamas's popularity and also Islamic Jihad, the idea of armed resistance against Israel. In polls, it indicates that beyond Gaza and other parts of Palestine and in the diaspora, that support for armed insurgency and attacks against Israel has gone up. Hamas's political standing has certainly gone up in both the West Bank and in Gaza. But whether that's going to translate into political power is a different issue.